Good morning, diners and travelers. You're listening to On the Menu with Ann and Peter Haig. And today's
It's those guys again.
It's what?
He said it's those guys again, that Ann and Peter show.
Yeah, exactly. So anyhow.
It must be Sunday.
Yeah, well, we're going to start off. I mean, this is I can't say it's a meaty, because it's not a meaty.
It's quite the opposite.
Exactly.
Quite the opposite.
Right, but we're going to start out with
there's an old friend. There's a little vegan politics in here, but
yeah,
but not to worry.
So, but anyhow, somebody that I'm really fond of is Sam Talbot, who is he's a wonderful chef, and he has a very interesting perspective on his book, which is about eating whole food, which we know we're supposed to be all doing. Listen to his story, though, because his life is as interesting as his work. Most of you probably know Chef Sam Talbot from his TV appearances in Top Chef. His photographs are all throughout this book that he just wrote, which I told him was a good thing because he looks healthy. He looked really healthy. The book is called 100% Real. And he has little subtitles like No Artificial Colors or Flavors, 100 Insanely Good Recipes for Clean Food Made Fresh. You actually started out with a condition, although just talking to you, you probably would have ended up cooking like this anyhow. But you were diagnosed with juvenile diabetes at age 12, so you naturally moved into this sphere of healthy food. But your taste seemed to run to clean flavors and foods anyhow.
I mean, that's just, it's where... It's kind of where I find my comfort. It's where I feel the best. And, it's kind of what's really fortunate. It's when I cook that way, it's when I get the most compliments on the food. So, there's just whether or not it's me being diagnosed with diabetes at a younger age helped me get to where I am or, my passion for food. I think it's a little bit of both. I think it's, I really think it's all of those things and how I ended up here. But, I also believe that, it's like you have to live a life of moderation, right? Things like fried chicken. I mean, I want to eat fried chicken every day, but we can't do that. You have to do it in moderation. So that's really what the book shows. It's like a lot of tricks and tips and modern kind of alternatives out there that are to help you lead a life of moderation with the foods that you kind of know and love. And like I said, the key about the book is that the recipes are accessible. They're repeatable. And they're easy to follow,
We've come a long way because I remember when my son married, well, my daughter-in-law, of course, about 12 years ago. And I remember talking to her about processed foods. And she said, "What's processed foods?"
Right.
She was young and everything. But so I opened her cupboard and I said, "All of this is processed foods."
Yeah.
I wanted to interject something here, but Sam, go ahead first. Go ahead.
No, I was just saying, I'm sure that if you ask most children in America, what American cheese is, they think it's cheese. It's not. It's a processed list of things that I can't pronounce, nor do I care to pronounce. we have come a long way though in 12 years, 15 years. Now, the programs that are available to us and with social media, there's a lot of people that really care and are passionate about, like I said, wholesome, thoughtful food. And that's the movement that we're pushing.
It's interesting. When I was growing up in England, one of my best friends developed juvenile diabetes when he was about 12 years old. I remember he had a pretty miserable life. In one respect, because he had to inject himself in his thigh every day with insulin in order to be able to deal with the condition. But we were always very jealous of him because when it came to school lunchtime, he always got a special plate.
Yeah, exactly. I take a shot.
But here's here's the point I wanted to make. That was then. Now in the now, where we're dealing with this condition being out there quite widely, and so much so that people are writing a book about it. Your book is so approachable because what it does is it outlines how with the condition you can use real food.
Of course, and how without the condition you can live with real food. I mean, take my condition aside. I mean, this is just how everybody should be eating. Forget type 1 diabetes. Just, I mean, people should be buying weekly at the farmer's market, buying for the couple of two meals they need. They don't need to be like, you know, doomsday preppers and have a refrigerator full of shit that no one's ever going to eat and go bad, because that's not what we're meant to do. We're meant to, like, take as we need and use that and keep going. So, but I think that kind of, this book kind of brings it back to the basics, and it's like, hey, listen, go to the farmer's market if you can, or go to your local market and buy for, you know, for the family, like, for 2 or 3 days, but you don't need to have all that stuff in the refrigerator. I mean, most refrigerators are just, like, bursting with condiments and processed things that I don't, again, with so many ingredients that no one even knows what they are.
Yes. No, you even for the uninitiated, this book is a help, because you start out just simplifying the ground rules here. 5 steps to keeping it real. Do you want to run through those?
5 steps for keeping it real. So let's talk. So just give me the headline, and we'll go through. I don't have the book actually right in front of me at the moment.
Okay. Eat plants and green for real.
Say that again. I'm sorry.
Number one step is eat plants and green for real.
Yeah. I mean, that's, you know, listen, when I wake up in the morning, if I have, you know, like most people, I have a cup of coffee. But if I have coffee, you know, the first thing in the morning, my stomach aches, I feel like jittery and anxious. But if I start the day off with a shot of wheatgrass, or if I start the day off with, a green, detoxifying green juice that's so easy to make, it takes, you know, less than 3 minutes to put together, get it in the blender, and then drink a coffee, you just feel great. So, I mean, you know, by eating plants and a lot of greens throughout the day, you get to cheat. You know what I mean? And by cheating, I mean, like, listen, if by dinner time I've already had 3 green juices and, had eaten a good amount of greens and vegetables, it's okay. I can cheat by having some pizza, or maybe, you know, some fried chicken, or a pack of gummy bears if I felt like it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Okay. The second step is cook at home at least 3 times a week.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, that's what goes back to, you know, cooking at home 3 times a week means, like, you know, that means you're going to the market, you're going to the farmer's market, and you're buying for those. That's like a one shot, like a one hit wonder. You know, you go to the farmer's market, you buy for those 3 meals, and then you're done. And when your refrigerator looks bare, it's time to go back to the market or your local grocer. But it's important to cook at home. It's important to, like, bring the family to the table where that starts, right? Without the roots and without, like, the, keeping that tradition alive, and, like, just the importance of sitting at the table and the importance of what's on the table. And then you're able to, like, manifest your destiny and how clean your food really can be. You know, because it's your ingredients, it's your hands. It's not like, you know, behind kitchen doors where you don't know how much oil or how much butter or how much sodium is going into something. Yeah.
So step 3, don't eat fabricated or super processed foods. And I think this is one of the areas that a lot of people are unsure of.
Well, I mean, you know, it's like, again, using American cheese as an example. I mean, there's so many ingredients in there that have nothing to do with cheese. You know, there's like imitation fruit juices where you go to buy a bottle of juice and it says 10% juice. Well, if you're buying a bottle of juice, what the hell is the other 90%? What does that mean? Is there, like, cash involved? Is there wood inside of it? You know, it just doesn't make sense.
Well, actually, in Parmesan cheese, it was true. Wood pulp was found in all those wheels of Parmesan cheese.
That's true. I do remember that.
Yeah.
Reading about that. So, yeah, I mean, you know, that's what it's – most things that you buy in cardboard or cans or, you know, jars have been – there's obviously preservatives, and there's some kind of chemical that can let them – you know, be fine throughout if a nuclear reactor went off. And I'm not necessarily stoked on having that in my body if I can also go to the farmer's market or to the grocer and spend probably less money, feel more fulfilled and gratified and you know, not feel like I ate a loaf of white bread after and just weighed down. You know what I mean?
And this next one, listeners might find surprising. Four, focus on FFP, the fat, fiber, and protein super trio. I think they'd be surprised after all this talk about how we have to eliminate fat. But
there's a difference between the type of fat that you want to eliminate. You want to eliminate bad fat, trans fat, you know, clean fat from avocados, clean fat from coconut oil, clean fat from, you know, those types of, you know, natural sources. That's the hard, healthy stuff that we need. It's, you know, stuff, whether canola oil or, you know, those types of processed vegetable oil and those types of processed, you know, fortified oils that you don't need. And so it's like, again, if you're eating the right fats, you know, the right olive oil, for example, nuts, for example, if you're eating those on a daily basis, you just, for me, again, personally, I just feel a lot more vibrant, a lot more energetic than if I'm eating things that, again, have been cooked in canola oil or things that have been cooked in.
Yeah, tell me about that. What is it with canola oil? Two things. I wanted to know why you so detest canola oil. And the other one is, where do you get grapeseed oil? Where do you get it?
You can get grapeseed oil wherever you can buy canola oil.
No, I mean, how do they create grapeseed oil from grapeseed?
Oh, just the same thing. Yeah, exactly. The same thing that the same way you would process olive oil or, you know, any oil stemming from a seed for that, you know, there's avocado oil. It's just my dog just punched me in the stomach. It's about, you know, the pressing of the fruit, in this case, the grapeseed. And the reason why chefs are, in general, people love grapeseed oil, it's very light and it has a very neutral flavor.
Yeah,
obviously.
We use it a lot, yeah.
Right, so...
tell me this, I mean, do you find people making wine or whatever they're using grapes for to be the same people that save their seeds and have it processed into oil?
I don't necessarily think that it can be the case. I'm not an expert on the subject, but
I never thought of it before.
I would think that most of the people, I think that, like, you stick to what you know type thing in most big business. Maybe if they're, you know, if they're known for making great pinots, I don't know though. You know, maybe there's some larger houses out there too that have, not only do they make, you know, they're great wines, but maybe they do make grapeseed oil. Again, I'm not sure.
That's a good question.
We'll look it up.
Yep, your final step number five is find the fun in food. Don't be a judgmental jerk. Tell us about that. You probably run across that a lot.
You know, I used to find myself being like very, not necessarily judgmental, but just very pushy on people. Like, you know, I'd be like, oh, you're going to get cheese on your burger? Well, I get to put cheese on it. What? You know, it just kind of like ruined the experience for people. And then I realized that I ended up often eating alone because no one wanted to eat with me. No, I'm just kidding. I just realized that I would take the fun out of the experience. Like, if my friend and I are going to eat a burger, my friend probably doesn't want to listen to me tell him all the things that why he shouldn't be getting cheese on his burger or why he should be eating, like, oh, whatever. You know what I mean? It takes the fun out of the experience when you could be talking about whatever it is the two guys talk about, right? Mm-hmm. So, or if you're on a date and you're like, oh, really? You're getting the white rice sushi instead of brown rice? it could create, like, you know, it's like, for guys, you never teach your girlfriend how to surf or snowboard because it'll cause a breakup. Like, same thing on a date. You don't necessarily want to start judging somebody while they're eating because it can lead to something. So, you have to find the fun in food and, you know, find a way to, again, live that life of, you know, moderation. And if it's a Sunday and Sunday is your family's cheat day and that's the day that you guys know you go to the movies as a group and you eat popcorn and chicken nut, I don't know, whatever that your family does, so what? Do it. But just try not to do it on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, right? Mm-hmm. Those other days you have to, like, it's leading a life of moderation and, you know, trying to keep it as real as possible. And again, don't be like me. I found myself being a dictator about it. And I was like, there's no way to, like, teach others with, and you can teach others with passion and lead by example, but not to be like, hey, really? Like, you need to get the brown rice sushi too, or really you're going to get just those things that, you know?
Yeah, no, I mean, I was really pleased to read your pantry must-haves, because that pretty much defines our pantry.
Great. So, well, then we're on the same page.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think that's good. And of your healthy powerhouse ingredients, the spirulina, I was talking to somebody who was had a section, wrote a cookbook with a section on color flavors.
On what?
Color flavors, or flavor colors. And there was somebody who actually had worked at Fat Duck, and she, I don't know if you know Heston Blumenthal, but he used to have, when he first opened, this thing where you had to guess whether you, there were two items, two discs, two halves of the disc. One was red, the other one was orange, and you were to pick, you knew one was beets and the other one was orange, and which one was, and it turns out the yellow one was the yellow beets and the golden beets, and the red one was blood orange. So we talked about her color for blue was she used this blue green algae, which I've never had.
So, I mean, spirulina again is one of the most, probably 10 most important and powerful superfoods available to us. I mean, it's got more iron than like anything that we think of Popeye, we think of spinach. Like, spirulina takes spinach and breaks it in half. It has, when you think of carrots and you think of, like, people always saying, eat carrots for good eye health and beta-carotene, spirulina takes carrots and it breaks them in half. Like, there's literally so much heart-healthy nutrients and, you know, minerals and irons and proteins and vitamins A and K, and literally list goes on. Spirulina, it's I give it to my dogs sometimes.
Do you?
You know, they make spirulina pills that you can I just top it in the dog's food. Again, I don't recommend doing that for everybody. I do my own thing, but the dogs seem to love it. They're really healthy and happy.
Well, I have chia seeds every morning with lentils and quinoa, usually with either leftover protein or soft boiled eggs. So that's good, isn't it?
That's awesome. I love it.
We're losing your sound. Are you?
Yeah, you did something to your sound.
I'm sorry?
You did something to your sound. You faded a little bit.
My speaker's kind of broken in the earpiece, so I just put you on speakerphone to hear you better.
Oh, okay, all right. Well, unfortunately, we can't hear you better.
All right, I'll, you guys just sound like my phone, I think, sat in water, so it's got a little bit of an echo. But,
that's a little better, thank you.
So, and goji berries is the hot food of the moment. Maca, I've never had. And I've been in Peru, but I've never had maca that I know of.
Maca, you know, comes from deep in the Andes and in the Andean Mountains. And, I mean, maca is great for a lot of things, but one of its most probably widely known and, widely known and celebrated use is that it's good for, like, the male libido.
Oh, really?
You know what I mean?
It's called Peruvian Viagra.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's called Peruvian Viagra. He's right. Yeah. So
you need to get a lot of that in your diet, dude.
I bathe in it. So
you bathe in it.
I think that another really useful section of this book is your game-changing substitutions.
Yeah.
I like that. Really like that.
Yeah, you know, I mean, people would never necessarily think to use butternut squash for cheese. And some people might say, well, what, just because it's yellow or just because? Well, no, if you puree butternut squash cheese and, like, you fold it into a, if you fold it into a souffle or if you fold it into an omelet where normally it would call for cheddar cheese, it does take on that color, but it also adds this, like, super, you know, sweet. Butternut squash is sweet, right? I mean, it adds this, like, fluffy sort of sweetness to an omelet where you don't even miss the cheese. And most of the time, if you season it correctly, I'm sure that you could probably just literally say, like, here's your cheddar omelet, and someone, you might get away with it a few times.
Well, you know, I think people know enough and have heard from you enough to know that you're trustworthy about what you're talking about this, the whole real foods. But the thing that really is important about your book, your recipes are really interesting. They are really interesting. Very creative. You have, you throw in a little Asian influence from time to time.
I mean, Asian and Southern, that's really, you know, there's, yes, Japanese is, you know, like roasted heirloom carrots with watercress and miso vinaigrette, you know, then there's something like white bean and cilantro hummus. It's, they are creative. They're interesting. And, you know, maybe things like a ham and cheese sandwich we've all had 1,000 times, but, you know, I'm looking at a recipe here for, one that I love, warm ham and spinach on rye with Gruyere cheese. So it's like, there's dishes that were, again, that bring us to a place. Where, I mean, I'm sure you can remember the last time you had a ham and cheese sandwich. I can, and it wasn't that memorable. But this guy right here, you know, the Gruyere cheese, the spinach, you know, and the rye bread, it's elevated. So that's all I tried to do, is just take things we know, items and ingredients that we're familiar with, and just elevate them a little bit with, usually it's just a little bit of acid, you know, whether it's, not the psychedelic kind, but, you know, the kind that comes from citrus or the kind that comes from wine. The kind that comes from vinegar. You'll notice that vinegar and citrus are used almost in every recipe, and there's a reason for that. It's because they literally make food come alive. They give energetic vibrance that you can't find any other way. You know, some people try to mask things with sugar or whatever, and you just can't. These things make food come alive, and that's why you see them so much throughout the recipes.
Yeah, now, every time my grandchildren, they have breakfast, and my son or daughter-in-law puts the frozen waffles in the toaster. I cringe. But you gave me a recipe here that I can make the waffles, and freeze them myself.
Of course. That's the beauty in it. A lot of these things, you know, whether it's for a whether it's for the vinaigrette or, you know, the tomato sauce or the recipes in here, they all freeze wonderfully, even if it's for soup, and you can come back to it at a later date, you know. And so this way, when you're, if you get a good deal at the farmer's market, because there's a few bruised tomatoes, and you're like, you know, and the person behind the counter is like, you know what, we'll give you 10 of these for a buck or whatever, go home and preserve them, make a sauce out of it, make a vinaigrette out of it, and freeze it, and have it for a while, you know what I mean?
And, you know, you have the section, I'm very into bowls, and your section,
what?
Bowls, B-O-W-L-S.
Yeah.
And I was reading, somebody was fed up, somebody in Eater or something, they were fed up with bowls, and I think they're amazing. I love them.
Listen, they're packed with everything you need, you know, protein, you have your grain, you have, you know, your vitamins from your fresh vegetables, your vibrance from your vinaigrette. I mean, sometimes people put an egg on it. Sometimes, you know, you find all these really cool ingredients in a bowl, and it's like, I've eaten a lot of meals in my life with a lot of different people, like we all have, right? And I noticed that a lot of times, you know, people don't like to mix flavors on a plate, right? Like if I go to a barbecue, I take the corn, I get the mashed potatoes, I get the chicken, I get all the jazz, and I like mix it all up.
Oh, yeah, right.
But I've been a lot of people that would totally gross out, and,
there are children like that, you know, you have the mashed potatoes.
Yeah, and some of my ex-girlfriends. But the point is that a bowl, in my opinion, is like, it's the best of all that, you know, it's like a hodgepodge of jam-packed with your protein, again, with your bold flavors, with, your fresh vegetables or what have you, and, you know, fresh piece of seared salmon on there, some grilled chicken, and it's a wrap, you know?
I don't have a sweet tooth, unfortunately, but I did
good
see...
Good for you. I wish I could trade with you.
People don't understand it. It gets to be difficult, you know? Especially, you know, if you're a restaurant critic and you have to taste it all. But anyhow, I did find one in here that was intriguing to me and appealing to me without a sweet tooth, is your frozen honey mousse with lime and sea salt. Looks
so funny that you picked that one. I just made that 2 days ago
really?
With the publishers over at Time Inc. And, man, like, I haven't had it in a year, you know, since mm-hmm. I made it the first time. And then I made it, like I said, literally like 48 hours ago. And I'm about to put it on the restaurant menu at Pretty Southern because it's so damn delicious and so easy to make. And it's, again, those things like my buzzwords, right? It's filled with like vibrance and it's so good and so smooth and great acid, really smooth texture. And it goes great in a glass. And if, you know, midsummer day, it's like one of those healthy go-tos instead of grabbing for, you know, the pint of ice cream. When you, if you do have a sweet tooth and you do want, something, this is like, it couldn't be easier to make. And like I said, so good in a really crowd, a really big crowd. Literally, we had a group of like 12, people getting down on the get down.
Well, sounds wonderful. So, anyhow, you mentioned your restaurant. Let's have the name of it.
Yeah, so we just opened Pretty Southern. It's on 14 Bedford Avenue in Greenpoint neighborhood of Brooklyn.
Okay.
It's about 5 minutes away from the city, and it's a wonderful location. Southern soul food at its finest, done with some modern tweaks. You know, we have pimento mac and cheese. We have fried chicken. We have gluten-free fried chicken. We have rotisserie chicken. A ton of vegan options, a vegan brownie, you know, hash browns, fried green tomatoes with pimento cheese, buttermilk biscuits, gluten-free buttermilk biscuits, everything you can imagine, and then some pies for days. It's all good.
It just sounds fabulous.
It is.
Anyhow, thank listeners,
you.
Again, this is Chef Sam Talbot. His new book, 100% Real, and what he's going to do is, this book is teach you how to de-junk, or unjunk is your term, your food. Thanks,
Jeff. That's
right.
Thank you so much for having me. Remember, keep it real.
Yes.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be right back with another take on veganism from an unusual source, a French chef, but So hang in there because it's an interesting and somewhat different point of view on the same subject.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Well, this is a big and very, very elegant book. We're talking to Jean-Christian Jury, and his book is the biggest book of vegan recipes I've ever seen in my life. But it's a production from Fadden, and they always turn out magnificent books, don't they, Jean-Christian?
Absolutely. I agree with you. It's a beautiful book, and you can use it also in the morning to exercise, actually.
Yes, I'm sure you can. And, I mean, to show how big it is, you have two ribbon bookmarks, not one, but two.
Yeah,
one purple
absolutely.
And one yellow. Very lovely.
Yeah.
You have an interesting story that I think our listeners would like to hear about how you ended up. First of all, you had a degree in what kind of engineering?
Oh, I'm graduated in electromechanics.
Uh-huh. But you got involved with cooking.
Yeah, actually what happened is that I started to learn to cook in a 5-star hotel during my summer holidays when I was 14. And it was an awful time because this is back in the 60s, and at that time, the big brigade in hotels, they were very difficult for kids. The chefs, they were not really as easy to work with than today. The regulations and rules were also not in place yet, so you were, as a kid, working like in hell. I spent over 3 months with my hands in fish and my hands in chicken.
Yes.
And I hated it. I just quit, and I graduated in electromechanics. And after my graduation, it was very difficult to find a job on that time because all the kids want to do the same job. And I don't know how many students on that year did the same as me,
right. But
it was hard. It was hard to find a job. So I just go back to the hospitality industry, go back to the kitchen and started to learn and study again.
Now, you were born in Toulouse. Did we say that yet?
Yeah, absolutely.
What happened? Move us further down the line as to what brought you to this point.
What happened is that I started to work for a Swiss company based in Zurich, and they were running around 108 hotels around the planet. And I was part of the team who was implementing new system, new kitchens, developing new concepts, food concepts, recipes. So this permits me to travel a lot. I discovered a lot of countries, worked with a lot of chefs, and this is where I learned really to work with spices, Southeast Asian kitchen, Indonesian, Indian, just name it. I was like a sponge. I really learned very, very much on that time.
You were working yourself to death, right?
Yeah, I mean, I worked myself to death when I was in London, when I opened my own restaurants. You know, it's a very hard and tough job when you're chef and restaurateur at the same time.
Right.
You run the company, you run the restaurant, you run the kitchen. I was going to the market at 4 o'clock in the morning to get my ingredients and work on my menus for lunch and for dinner. It was a 14 hours to 16 hours job sometimes.
Yes,
and,
it is.
Yeah, and you know, and I had a very bad habit. I was just eating whatever and whenever, not sitting at all, just taking some bites left and right in the kitchen. And of course, at one point, my body just gave up, and I had my first heart failure. But you know, the interesting thing is that my surgeon, the guy who checked me the first time, he said to me, "You see, everybody has two lives." And I said, "What do you mean everybody has two lives?" And he said, "Yes, you have two lives. And your second life starts when you realize that you have only one." And yeah, and he was completely right, because what is most important than taking care about your health, mm-hmm. your energy, you know, it's so important. And I didn't realize that. I was just working like a donkey and ruining my health. And when I realized that, I started to really learn and study vegan and raw foods, because it's a life-saving on long term. And to get your right level of energy, to eat, again, fresh plants, which is very, very important for us, saved my life. I feel so good now. I didn't take any medication since my operation. And, I sleep like a baby. I feel so, so, so good and so grateful.
So you opened your own restaurant again, though. I mean, that was, you weren't shy away from this.
Yeah, what I did is, first, I could not afford to change my concept in London and to open a restaurant in London based on just vegan food. The numbers were not good for me. I mean, for conventional restaurants, it's already very difficult to operate. So imagine when you just address a very small chunk of the market. The vegan and raw food back in 2006 and 2007 was not really there. So I had to find a new destination where I could afford the rent, where I could afford to develop the concept starting from the scratch. And this is why I chose Berlin, because compared to Paris, London, Milan or Barcelona, it's a big difference in rent. So I did open there.
Okay, now that surprises us a little bit, because
we thought Berlin was expensive.
Well, we were in Berlin about 6 or 7 years ago.
Yeah.
And they were building everywhere. They were building buildings wherever, right and left, north and south, east and west, they were building new buildings. The Unter den Linden was mostly closed because everything was under construction, and it seemed like it would be an expensive place. But if you found it not, then that's a great thing.
No, you know, I had 120 covers in my restaurant with a huge terrace, having also 120 seats outside on the terrace. Uh-huh. And I was just next to the Kepinski Hotel in the courtyard.
Oh, I know that.
Yeah, it was a beautiful location. I was next to Mr. Udo Weiss, which is the star hairdresser in Germany. Mm-hmm. And I had a great clientele. And it was, I think, the right time to bring something healthy to the market. I had smoothies, fresh pressed juices, everything you can find in London and New York today. I started to create new flavors, new tastes, and new mix back in 2007 than in Berlin. And I think this is why we became, at one point, the best vegan destination in the world. It took me 7 years, but we managed to do it.
Wow.
Now, you have such an incredible assemblage of ingredients and recipes in this book.
Yeah.
It's hard to imagine that one person's brain could keep them all filed away there.
Yeah, but this is the experience and the traveling and the fact that I always work in very cosmopolitan cities where you work with Indian chefs, with Thai chefs, with Indonesian chefs, and you learn also from them, you know. I think most of the exotic recipes I learned basically with the staff food they were cooking for themselves in a kitchen.
Yeah, well,
that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
It's interesting, with each recipe in the recipe sections, you have the name of the country or the region in the top corner of the page.
I always took notes. Every time I had an idea or I liked some food, I always took notes and wrote it in my book, by hand, of course. And when I decided to cook vegan, I tried to find out which recipe I could veganize without using fake meat, fake fish, fake seafood, or whatever, you know.
Yeah, I hate that stuff.
So, because I'm completely against, you know, this new concept of vegan food. The industry 7 years ago, 8 years ago, was not interested at all in vegan food because it was such a small market. But today that it becomes a mainstream market, they start also to process vegan food in a very ugly way. And it doesn't make sense for me. So I always say, guys, you want to cook vegan, cook as fresh as possible. That's the chance we have. Go to the market, go to the farmer's market, get beautiful ingredients and eat them same day. Don't store them. You know, it doesn't make sense to store fresh food. You lose all the quality.
You know, people think that a vegan diet is rather limiting, but the first indication or the clue I had to how broad the menu could be is your list of the vegan pantry in the front. I mean, how many pages of ingredients? 1, 2, 3, 4. 5, 6. So, I mean, it doesn't look like you missed out much on anything.
Well, my advice is get a bigger kitchen.
The what?
Get a bigger kitchen.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of stuff here.
At least get a bigger pantry.
Yeah. Now, you don't have to buy everything, you know what I mean? And the ingredients we use are quite simple, actually, and you can reuse them, and it's not complicated. But, of course, if you go to Thailand, if you go to Indonesia, or India, or South America, you're going to have different ingredients. And my great pleasure was, for example, to find recipes with very special veggies that you cannot find in Europe or America, and then I just try to find an alternative to what we can buy here, and so I come up with a new recipe, and it works very well. Once you know which texture you want to cook and what the result should be, then you can start to work.
Well, you have how many countries, 150 countries represented,
yeah,
and how many recipes? 200.
Oh, Over 450.
Oh, 450, wow. So, I mean, you know, some of these places, I don't even know where the places are.
I can bring you my passport.
There's one of these islands I never even heard of.
you probably asked me where it was, and I told you.
Yeah, I guess.
Was it Moldova? No, it wasn't Moldova.
Reunion Island. Reunion Island?
Reunion Island's in the South Atlantic, I believe.
Yeah, this is part of the French territories.
They speak
French there.
It's sort of like St. Helena and the Falkland Islands. It's sort of just stuck out in the middle of nowhere, right?
I know.
If the French had captured the Duke of Wellington at Waterloo, they would have shipped him off to Reunion Island.
Don't make me cry, please. Don't talk about Waterloo with me.
Well, you know that you even have a recipe from Mongolia here.
Yeah.
And we have our nephew married a woman, a doctor from Mongolia. And but she likes dried camel meat.
Her recipes are not exactly vegan.
I assumed they were just big meat eaters because that's what she likes.
Yeah, absolutely. But this is another aspect of vegan food that I really like, because basically I don't understand how is it possible today in our modern country to still buy raw milks and raw cheeses, because we all lactose intolerant and we know it. And all these allergies we have around comes from that. Look the kids in which state they are. I mean, the lactase, which is the sugar in the lactose, cannot be absorbed by the body. Once you stop to drink the milk of your mom that you should drink when you grow up as a baby, the body changes completely and doesn't produce what you need to break down the lactase.
Exactly, yes.
No, Anna's told me that lots of times.
Yeah, I see no reason why any adults have to drink milk.
Yeah,
he's saying exactly the same thing. Exactly,
yes. Yeah, and this is why I create my milks based on nuts, like almond nuts, cashew nuts, pecan nuts, Brazilian nuts, hazelnuts. You have so many options to make great cream, yogurts, and milk. And you know what? They fermented exactly the same way as raw milk, cow milk, or goat milk. And I can make cheeses without a problem using just the nuts today. And they're very good. They age also 3 months, 4 months, 5 months. And we should really take this direction.
Now, there's one thing we shouldn't miss out here, because as if you didn't have 450 recipes of your own, you enlisted a few friends who are some of the world's more famous chefs, and you got them to give you recipes as well. Now,
I know the guys, they're great. And you know, in the future, in a couple of years, I think that every restaurant around the planet is going to have vegan options on the menu. And they start already.
I can tell from the number of books that we get that, you know, first it was unusual to even get a vegetarian book. And then it moved to vegan books, one right after the other. So it's popularized. But now, you know what I'm getting a lot of is insect books. No, they're not vegan, are they? Are insects vegan?
No.
Not really.
No, they're not. But, you know, for me, vegan is not a religion. And what I like very much about the concept of being vegan is that you can sit at the table with any carnivore or omnivore or whatever. I don't mind. The most important is for me to have my vegan diet. The other guys, they can eat what they want. It doesn't bother me. Uh-huh. And, you know, the problem was, at the beginning, the word vegan had a very negative image. And this was just because the people, like animal rights people, PETA, and all these great association, they were so loud and so active that people were scared.
Yeah, oh, vegans. Me too. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, and so I had to kill this fear, and I had to bring a new positive image behind the concept. So what I did in Berlin, I just deleted completely the word vegan from all my marketing, my menus, and I just replaced it by plant-based food.
Right. You know, one of your testimonials is from Amanda Cohen, and that's what she does when she positions her restaurant, Dirt Candy.
Yeah, I'm there tonight. Yeah.
Oh, well, you're good. Oh, good. Yeah, she's wonderful.
I love her.
Yeah, we have a strange vegan restaurant in Pittsburgh, which is Polish vegan.
Well, don't laugh, because, you know, I was just in Poland a couple of months ago, and it's one of the most active vegan destinations today, as well as Romania. You believe that?
Yeah, no, I find it amazing, because they're all heavy meat and potatoes countries.
Now, if you tell us, we believe you. If you say vegan is the next wave to hit Berlin, we believe you, because you made it happen. So, I don't know what you're going to do next.
I don't know, but I found 5 raw food restaurants in Bucharest, which is more than Paris or London.
Really,
it's amazing. And then I found out also it's because the first aide of the president is a vegan guy and raw foodist, and he really tries to bring healthy food to the country, because they have so many guys sick there. So he tries just to fix a little bit what he can with food, the same way I do everything.
Now, there's one piece of information that I think we should have in this interview, and I haven't seen it anywhere in the background information we got in the book, and that is the name of your restaurant in Berlin and what its website is.
Ah, I shut down my restaurant in Berlin.
Oh, you shut it down? Okay. Oh,
yeah.
You became too famous.
No, it's not that, but I'm not 64. I did it. I worked so hard. And basically what I think, that to work in a restaurant today as a chef is very, very hard.
Yes.
And in Europe, all the rules, regulations, the way you have to hire staff, they have 5 weeks holidays, they sit between 3 and 4 weeks every year. So when you have a team of 17 people, you have to pay like 22 of them just to make sure that you can run the operation.
Yes.
And then at the end of the year, when I did my calculation, I was left with something like 5% of my turnover before taxes, working like hell again. And it doesn't make sense.
Well, so what do you do now?
Yeah, here's the big issue, I think, is if we can leave a trail, as long as you don't mind, that people can use to make sure they're tuned into what you're doing. Because what you're doing is obviously interesting. So do you have a website?
It's very easy. Just go to jeanchristianjury.com, which is my full name. Or if you want some recipes, I have a lot of recipes that are published nearly on the daily basis on my Facebook. So it's just facebook.com/ and my name, Jean Christian Jury. And you're going to find tons of information, my contacts, my fellow chefs, okay, my cooking classes. Like yesterday,
You do cooking classes too.
Yeah. I cooked at the IC yesterday in New York.
Okay, so you're living in New York.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm going to move to Denver on Tuesday. I'm going to give classes soon in Zurich. Then I go back to India, to New Delhi. Mm-hmm. And I open a school in Thailand in November.
Wow, so you're still moving around there.
Yeah. When are you coming?
Oh, I don't know. We just were in Australia, and then we were in Chicago, and then we were in Philadelphia, and now we're going to go to England. I mean, we moved too. We moved around also.
When are you in England?
July.
Beginning of July.
I'm there in September. There is the vegan fair on the 22nd of October in London.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And I'm a speaker there, like in Paris on the 14th of October. I do all the big vegan fairs, and I have nice conferences. People have so many questions, you know. This is what's very interesting for me.
Right. Well, sure. People do have questions, but right now I'm really concerned about insects. I can't bring myself to eat them.
They're packed with proteins, you know, and I heard that it's going to be the food for the future, but
yes.
I don't believe so.
Well, we'll see.
I have the same reaction as you. I just I cannot taste them first because I'm a good excuse. I'm vegan. I cannot.
There you go. That's very smart. Yeah.
Well, you have been a delight, Jean-Christian Jury.
Yes.
And you are wonderful, and I'm glad that you're close by in the U.S., and maybe we'll run into each other.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Have you ever wondered what the secret is to making food taste good? Well, there are a whole lot of reasons, including getting to know people like Sam and the chef in the previous interview.
But there's
another view of it that is perhaps reachable. Important thing about it is it's reachable for the modern day household. Where everything's stressed out, everything has to happen super quick, all that kind of good stuff. So we came across these people who discovered that you could do great things with a slow cooker. So this interview is the story of how they went from an idea to a business. And a business that sounds like it serves a real purpose for those people who slow cook. We don't do that. But we know that our son and daughter-in-law do, and we know many other people do. So for them, this track and this product set is a godsend.
Wonderful. We're going to be talking to two busy moms that came up with a brilliant idea for a company, Meg Barnhart and Jane McKay, is it?
Hello. Hi, yeah, this is Jane.
Okay, and the company is called The Zen of Slow Cooking. Now, with that kind of a name, I need somebody, probably Meg, I would think, to explain why Zen is involved with this.
Oh, that's a great question. We have lots of Zen stories, but they all really start at the beginning, which is my journey as a failed home cook. And that started when my children were very little. I was struggling to get food on the table, and my middle son was diagnosed as developmentally delayed when he was a baby and didn't develop functional language till he was 4. So you can imagine by the time we hit the school age, it was very difficult for him and for the family, and I found myself struggling at dinner time to get food on the table because I was preoccupied with other matters. And I called my best friend one night in tears, and I said, tell me what to do. I'll do anything, you know, I just don't know what to do. I said, I can't even get dinner on the table anymore. And she said, I want you to stop crying. You're not a failure. Get off the phone and go buy a crock pot. And I forgot the first two, and I said, I don't understand the third one at all, because I didn't grow up in a home with one, and my mother cooked from scratch every afternoon. And I said to her, so tell me, why should I do that? I don't understand. And she explained the science behind it. You know, you get all your food in the morning and come back and it's waiting for you. And I thought it sounded like magic. So I went out and bought myself a slow cooker the next day and fell in love with it. And I loved the ease, the aroma, that zen-like feeling you get when you walk in the home and you know dinner is waiting for you. And so that really is the genesis for the Zen of slow cooking. And then the other part of the Zen piece of it is when, over time, I began to really learn how to center myself in a variety of ways. And one of them was to actually chop my vegetables. My prep time become for the slow cooker actually became a time sort of reflection and meditation. I turned off the phone and I had a 20-minute strict food prep time, and that became sort of a meditation time. And so that was another piece of the Zen-like moment. So that's the beginning of the story.
Well, now, how does Jane get involved?
Oh, hi. So this is Jane. So when Meg and I first met in 2011, Meg was looking for 2012. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Meg was looking for me, and I was really looking for her. She came to me with this idea, and she said, "You know, I have this idea. There's Zenithal cooking." And I said, "Well, that sounds great. I was recipe testing. I have a background in food science. That's what I did my degree in at college, was economics and food science." And I said, "This sounds really great, but, you know, there's a problem here. I don't actually own a crock pot." So the next day I went out and bought my very first slow cooker. And in a similar way to Meg, I discovered, you know, the ease with which I could create a dinner for my very young family at the time. I had a 3- and 4-year-old and get the dinner on the table. So it was from there that Meg and I formed our partnership and took it to the next step, which was launching a blog in 2012, followed by our slow cooker spice blend product the following year. So it really did come from a very organic place. You know, we met and then very slowly formed this partnership. And came through the cooking. And was, you know, it was just a really, really interesting start to a great, you know, business.
But it's quite a step from actually buying a slow cooker to saying we're going to make products that people can use to create slow cook meals for themselves.
You know what? That's really interesting, and you're absolutely right. I think one of the interesting things, this is Jane, by the way, one of the interesting things about the journey that I had was, as a from-scratch cook myself, I had a different approach. I kind of looked at this, what I call, alien piece of kitchen equipment once I'd bought it and thought, well, I know how to cook, so how do I make this work in this way? And so the very first thing I did was put a whole chicken carcass with some bay leaves and some onion and carrot and scraps from the fridge into my slow cooker and thought, well, I know how to do that, so that makes sense to me. That's how I'm going to get the flavors to work. And so from that very first recipe and me feeling comfortable in this new environment with this strange and peculiar, you know, fix it and forget it type scenario, I then really was able to infuse my own and, you know, the way a lot of people cook, but infuse my own methodology into working out the layers to a good cooked, slow cooked recipe. So you start with, you know, we have four components really. Everything starts with a good recipe in the first place, but you start with your sautéed onions and your vegetables and the vegetable base, and then the next layer comes your aromatics, your dried herbs and your dried spices. And the third layer is your protein component, whether that's meat or vegetarian alternatives, and then your liquid. And really following that methodology, Meg and I, you know, between us can take pretty much any recipe which is inclined to work in a slow cooking way and make it really good for the slow cooker.
I want to also add on to that. So the genesis was really my home cook story. But the heart of the business really, we have a product for the business in a large part started in 2010. I started studying, going back to my middle son, what life would look like for him when he aged out of the school system. And like many young adults with learning challenges found there was so little consciously created in employment. And I was sitting with a friend one day, I'm a serial entrepreneur, and I said to her, I know what I'm meant to do with my life is to do something for Doug, my son. And I said, I don't know where to begin. And she said, what are you having fun with? And I said, I'm having fun with this whole slow cooking journey I'm on. And she said, do something with that. So that led to the idea to start the business, and then which led to Jane. But when we started the blog, the food blog, it was really to get a placeholder online and in the market to incubate this idea, which we incubated. Actually, Jane did right from the get-go, was to create this flavor profile. Because our first one was a whole spice infusion. It was a Moroccan tagine. And we quickly brought that to the market in within a year of starting the blog. So, and then the following year, 2014, when we had enough demand for our product, we actually started our workplace transition model employing adults with disabilities, starting with 4, and I'm happy to say we've got 30 adults now working for us.
Wow, that's wonderful.
Who help us package the blend. So that's why we went so quickly to a product.
Now, you came to our attention because you won a selfie for best new product.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
How many years have you been doing this? In the company, but also like submitting your product for the competition with the Fancy Food Show.
Well, we did. It was our first application this year. We were in their new artisan market last summer, and a number of people said, "You guys got to apply for a Sophie Award." And so we applied for the Sophie Award and literally just launched our 10th blend, which is the Szechuan spice. My oldest is a Chinese major, so I was in China and brought back these fabulous Szechuan peppers to Jane, and she plays around in the kitchen and came up with our 10th spice blend, Szechuan spice, and we entered it in the competition, and I can't even tell you how excited we were when we found out we won. It was a wonderful moment for us. So,
and I'd just like to add as well, you know, just going back a step to the whole spice infusion, that really, we were rewarded for our innovation in that category, because the whole spice infusion, I'm not sure if you're familiar with our product, this particular product, but it's essentially a muslin bag filled with premium whole spices. So they're not ground up in any way. And the reason that we do that is because for certain cuisines, and this will interest you, you know, with your interest in food, certain cuisines utilize whole spices in a very special way. They don't grind them up. So, for example, a Moroccan tagine, which was our very first spice blend that we actually took to market. Moroccan tagines typically use whole cinnamon pieces, cloves, all sorts of other whole spices, cumin, coriander seed. And the reason they work so well in the slow cooking environment, just like in a Moroccan tagine cooking vessel, is that they're cooked slowly and for a long time. And what we realize is that the essential oils are released very slowly during that process. So nothing has been compromised before it actually gets cooked in that way. And so the whole spices really lend themselves to being put in that muslin bag and hand sealed and used in the method that they were supposed to be and intended to be used in their, you know, these ancient cuisines. And the same goes for the Szechuan blend, which is the one that, you know, we won the innovation product for. And we have three blends like that. We have a mulling spice, the Moroccan tagine, and the Szechuan.
The Moroccan tagine, I just wanted to share with you that we're also working with Rumi Spice to use their saffron in that one. So that's kind of an exciting part about that particular whole spice infusion.
Well, if you think about it, the tagine is sort of like it's really the original slow cooker.
Yeah, it is. It just, you're right, Gigi, absolutely.
It just doesn't have an electric input.
Yeah, and so we've really tried to stay true to that methodology and adapt it, you know, in a modern environment. So part of our tagline is, you know, we put a contemporary twist on slow cooking. That's really what we're trying to do. And I would say, I'd like to highlight that our remaining seven blends are all ground spice blends. So we have a series. Three are whole spice infusions, and the remaining seven are ground spice blends. So we do have two slightly different products.
Now, do you...
And our favorite new invention, or our favorite new appliance is the Instapot. So we're also adapting a lot of our
recipes
to the
Instapot. I tried to get a sample Instant Pot, but I never will send one. I guess I have to go out and buy one. I'm not sure I'll use it. I mean, I get something and then I give it away because I have just cupboards full of stuff, you know. So, I mean, I had a pressure cooker. I gave that away. I had a single serve coffee machine. I gave that away. So,
well, you might be enjoying the zen of dining out too, since you're a restaurant critic. So you might have a whole other zen like experience.
Well, we do have a lot of zen like experiences.
We do.
Some of them we talk about. Some of them we don't.
Yeah, you know what I like about your product line is that your whole company, your whole product line, there has a logic to it. And you make everything as simple as possible for anyone, and including you have that great grocery shopping list for each dish, which I think is fabulous.
Well, that leads up to what I was going to ask about, actually, because along with the spice blend, then you have a recommendation of the ingredients that should be used with this spice in it. Correct?
That's correct. Yeah, this is Jane, Peter. Absolutely. We have what we call our signature recipe on the back.
Got
so we give
it,
you
it.
Your full shopping list and the directions to complete that single recipe, just so that, you know, if you're in the grocery store, I've actually watched people do this. They'll take the packet and they'll shop the store. So it's really convenient from that perspective. But also we have an additional, you know, fun bit on the bottom of the package, which gives you a suggested drinks pairing, be it alcoholic or non-alcoholic. and depending on the recipe. So that's all very relevant. And then there's alternative recipes on our website. So if you don't want to make the same signature recipe again, you can also pick an alternative. So, for example, our Coq au Vin blend is really great. It's a blend of really fragrant herbs, but you can also use it for a chicken marbella recipe from Silver Palette. You could use it for chicken and wild rice soup. So we try and give people the flexibility to do that. But one of the, just going back to your Zen comment as well, we actually have five words that we wrote from the very first blog post that we launched our blog with. And we have a tagline of mindful, nourishing, relevant, simple, and delicious. And whenever we're creating something new, be it a product, be it a marketing campaign, we always circle back to those five words, and it really keeps our, it's our guiding principles in many ways. It keeps us very relevant, and you know, we stay on our mission. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're very intentional. I mean, what you said, you know, and I like to say one of the things we created a product for that we were looking for in the market and just didn't exist, because our spices are all premium. They're not irradiated. They don't have salt or additives. The only one that's got a little salt is our smoky barbecue. So it's just really about developing a really good, nutritious, healthy, slow-cooked meal.
Now, where do people get, well, first of all, the website, and then where can people go buy them?
Well, we're working our way through the Whole Foods market in the Chicagoland area and up through the Midwest, and currently, we've just been picked up by Plum Markets in Michigan. We've been picked up by Market of Choice in Oregon. We've got some wonderful smaller places like Paulina's Meat Market in Chicago or Sunset Foods. And then you're online. We're available through our own website, through Amazon, and also with Peapod. I don't know if you get Peapod in Pittsburgh, but we have two co-branded meal kits with them for our chicken tortilla soup and our smoky barbecue, our Carolina pulled pork. We were in Chicago's Next Best Food Product in 2016, and from that competition, we made it to the finals. Peapod was so excited about our product. We launched two slow cooking meal kits with them, and they're doing so well. They just launched them on the East Coast in New York, New Jersey, Maryland, Washington.
Well,
and Virginia.
I'd say you're a success.
Hold on a second. Don't drown this out, because this is the most important thing we're going to record in the whole interview. The website is the Zen of Slow Cooking, no punctuation, .com.
That's correct. Yes.
go get them, Jane and Meg.
Thank you. Absolutely. Thank you so much. It was really great talking to you.
Well done, Sophie, and I'm sure I'm sure this is not the last time we'll talk to you.
Oh, thank you. Come visit us at the Fancy Food Show if you're going to be there.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, as they say in the business, that's a wrap.
Yes.
Until same time, same place next week. We'll see you then.
Bye-bye.